Fletcher and his girlfriend Maggie come up to work a kind of defunct cherry farm, and it's supposedly at for the family sugar Fletcher's family sugar company.
That's right. It's one of the more unusual communes you'll find in fact or fiction. And the situation is that Fletcher's family is very wealthy, and his father has great expectations that Fletcher will follow in the family line and be a great business success. Fletcher wants to be a good son, but at the same time, he has very utopian ideals and has this idea of starting up a commune. So by moving up to this cherry farm in Canada, he's really trying to have it both ways. He's trying to be the good son and also strike out on his own. And as a result, he makes a lot of bad decisions, I think. These kind of mixed motivations just don't square with each other a lot of the time, and he upsets and hurts a lot of people as a result. As a writer, I'm really interested in how people get along with each other or fail to get along with each other. I think with my first novel, the mysteries writing about a small town, I was interested in the question of how a community holds together, especially when it faces something like the disappearance of one of its members, which is the central part of the plot of that book. Then with Once We Had a Country, I was really interested in communes because they're communities in microcosm, right? They're trying to work out in quite radical new ways how to get along in a very egalitarian way, a democratic way. But you know, you only need a couple of people for disagreements to happen. In the late 60s, early 70s, there were some people who really wanted revolutionary action. They wanted to completely transform their ways of life. And there were other people who, you know, wanted time in the country and just wanted to get away from it all. A lot of the drama and a lot of the conflict that happens in the novel happens with regard to these different priorities that people have as they try to live together in a fairly confined space in one farmhouse and pursue their very different dreams.
And then there's this other section of the book which is happening way off in Laos with Maggie's father, Gordon. Tell me about Gordon and Yi Pao. Am I saying that anywhere close to correctly?
Yao Pao, yeah. Well, Maggie's relationship with her father is sort of the traumatic prehistory for her as she's coming up to Canada. She and her father, at the start of the novel, have just become estranged from one another. She has these countercultural ideals and a desire to move to Canada with her boyfriend. Her father, at the same time, is gaining ideals of his own, but they're spiritual ones. He's rediscovered religion, and through rediscovering religion, found a passion in missionary work in Laos. So he's off to a different country as well at the start of this book. I think if people are asked about the era of the late 60s and early 70s, almost everyone knows about the Vietnam War. But very few, I think, relatively few, remember or know about the war in Laos, which was happening right next door at the same time, involving many of the same players, US-backed forces against communist forces. And for me, I was compelled by the idea of someone of an older generation than the baby boomers, Maggie's father, having his own ideals, and just as his daughter is going to a different country to pursue her ideals, he's going to Southeast Asia, not to fight in the war, but to try to help people as a missionary.
How Canadian of you, Robert, to see us as a great disappointment. No, we're the great cherry orchard that's never really lived up to its promise. It's like, wow, that is so Canadian.
Well, there's a great history of finding Canada to be a disappointment. Jacques Cartier apparently showed up in Canada and called it the land God gave Cain. You know, this place of exile and punishment. Voltaire wrote it off as a few acres of snow. Periodically, Canadians worry that Canada's not living up to its promise. You know, Wilfrid Laurier famously said at the start of the 20th century that it was going to be Canada's century. And by the end of the 20th century, people were shaking their heads at this failed prediction. But if there's a time when people really felt excited about Canada and very fiercely proud of the country, excited about its possibilities, I think it was that time around the Centennial, Expo 67, through to the Summit Series in 1972. And that period is still one that keeps coming up in discussions of Canadian history and identity. So that really drew me back to it when I was writing this novel. I wanted to think about what exactly it was that people were so excited about in that time, and whether the Canada of that era, is it all the same as the Canada now? So I think this raises big questions about who Canadians are, what their country is, and what it can be or should be. Margaret Atwood, back in the Vietnam War era, famously said that people are Canadians because they choose to be Canadian. And I think what she means is that we're a country of people who have come from other places, in terms of the majority of the people, often very recently, but also a country in which it's very easy to leave. You know, it's very easy for a lot of Canadians to make the choice to move to the United States, say, and pursue a different life down there. So the fact that people in Canada are choosing to be together makes it quite a remarkable place, and a place that, as a result, also, though, is always under negotiation. I mean, I think it's not surprising, because of the character of the population, that we keep talking about what kind of country Canada is and who Canadians are.
The book is Once We Had a Country. I've been speaking with the author Robert McGill, and the novel Once We Had a Country is published by Knopf Canada.